The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Connolly, Judge Reyes, Judge Flory, the Honorable Francis Connolly presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Court of Appeals. Our first case this morning is Lynch versus the State of Minnesota. The file number is A21-0080. As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, the respondent will have 15 minutes, and then finally the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. This matter is being recorded. However, I just wanted to alert everyone, and particularly those who are guests, that you are not allowed to record us or anything else. There is going to be a recording, an audio recording of this posted by tomorrow, but no one is allowed to record privately. So I just admonish you not to do that. With that, Mr. Longsdorf, if you're ready, you may begin, sir. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Zach Longsdorf. I represent Appellant Brent Lynch. From Mr. Lynch's perspective, the most important issue today is whether the district court lacked the authority to modify his sentence in the way it did, such that this matter should be remanded for a hearing where Mr. Lynch has the opportunity to either accept the new terms of his sentence or withdraw his plea pursuant to Rule 15.04. The district court denied Mr. Lynch's motion on timing and procedural grounds, concluding that the motion should be treated as a petition for post-conviction relief and was therefore time and procedurally barred, and that even if this wasn't the case, that Mr. Lynch's motion failed on the merits because the district court had the authority to change the terms of his sentence in the way it did.
Mr. Longsdorf?
Yes.
Yeah, why didn't the district court's decision to treat it as a post-conviction petition, why do you contend it's erroneous? Because it sounds like you're seeking to allow appellant to withdraw his plea.
That is ultimately the relief that Mr. Lynch is seeking here. And so the reason we believe it's appropriate that this would be a 2703 motion is that this was the result of a Rule 27.03 motion. And as I'll discuss in a couple of minutes, the change in the terms of the sentence, I think, were unauthorized. So Mr. Lynch has an unauthorized sentence.
But however, if you're seeking to withdraw the plea, that's different than modifying the sentence.
I agree, Your Honor. And I think ultimately
if you agree, then why isn't that fall under the petition, under the post-conviction statute then?
Well, even so, I agree. I think that this does fall under the post-conviction statute, but also the 2703 for the reason I just stated. But ultimately, even if this is a petition for post-conviction relief, it's still going to be appropriate to review the merits of that claim. And the reason for that is that Mr. Lynch, I believe, can satisfy the interest of justice exception here, where the claim needs to be non-frivolous and in the interest of justice. And ultimately, the Supreme Court has set out five non-exclusive factors to look at to determine whether it's appropriate to review a claim in the interest of justice. But really what they're ultimately looking for is some kind of impediment that caused the defendant not to have raised the claim in a timely manner. Now here, Mr. Lynch contends that his claim should be reviewed in the interest of justice.
Mr. Longsdorf, I'd like to just for a minute follow up on Judge Reyes's excellent question. So I have to admit, I found this all rather confusing, as I often do. But as I understand it, well, let me start by this question. Do you contend that restitution was part of the underlying plea agreement?
Mr. Lynch has always contended that it was not a part of the underlying plea agreement. And I think
I agree. So therefore, again, speaking for myself and not my treasured colleagues, I think based on that, then the proper procedure was under Rule 27 because you're seeking to modify the sentence and restitution was not part of the underlying plea agreement / conviction. So I agree with you there. And I think the Supreme Court has said, however you characterize it as all, or excuse me, however a petitioner characterizes his arguments. They have their own sort of procedure. But, and so let's say for the sake of argument, you're not time barred and that Rule 27 was the proper method. It's your position that the district court lacked authority to reduce the restitution award, right?
Correct.
Okay. And that therefore we should send it back so he can either agree to reduce the restitution award or withdraw his plea. So I understand that argument. The problem I have is whatever error occurred, because you know you're saying your client didn't have notice because he wasn't served, his lawyer wasn't served. He wasn't served because at that time he was pro se. At the end of the day, what prejudice has your client suffered? I mean, I could see making this argument if the amount of the restitution was increased. And I see all those cases where sua sponte increases the term of conditional release or imposes a term of conditional release. But for the life of me, I can't understand if the amount of restitution went down, what prejudice at all your client has suffered. So why don't you tell me what prejudice he suffered by reducing the restitution award?
So it has to do with the circumstances of this case where Mr. Lynch did challenge that there was any restitution involved. And then he ended up on his direct appeal. A panel of this court says, well, restitution is part of it. And also Mr. Lynch agreed to the amount of restitution imposed.
I got position, that. So now that it's been lowered, I just don't see why. I mean, I suppose we could send it back and he can decide whether he'd like to pay the original amount. I have a fairly good opinion of my colleagues that we're not going to let him withdraw his plea to the murder charge. Do you really want us to send it back so that he can argue that he should pay the full amount because, he really feels he does owe the money? My hunch is your client wouldn't want that, or we'd have yet a third post-conviction relief motion for ineffective assistance of counsel. But explain to me why, and then I will not interrupt you for the rest of the hearing, what prejudice your client suffers when the amount of restitution goes down and not up.
So I would agree that it doesn't necessarily prejudice Mr. Lynch for the restitution to go down. But beyond that, we believe, and I think the case law shows, that a modification to a sentence has to have a basis in law. There has to be a reason for having done it. And that's what's missing in this case. Was ultimately, even though Mr. Lynch didn't think there was ever any restitution that he agreed to, the ultimate outcome is that he was said to have agreed to the amount that was imposed. And here, the basis for the motion is Rule 27.03. And what we have is Rule 27.03, and there's this Meredith case that says that 27.03 grants some authority to change restitution. But ultimately, Rule 27.03, by its own terms, applies to an unauthorized sentence. And where Mr. Lynch went through his direct appeal and had this outcome that says he agreed to the amount of it, I don't think there's anything unauthorized about his sentence such that Rule 27.03 would allow for a modification in 2014. And the same thing is true. 611A04 allows for modification of restitution after sentencing, but there's three factors that need to be met, with the last one being the true extent of the victim's loss or the loss of the Crime Victims Reparation Board was not known at the time of sentencing or the dispositional hearing or the hearing on the restitution request. And so there isn't a basis to modify restitution here, which Mr. Lynch is said to have agreed to. And because there's no basis to modify that sentence at the time it was done, the sentence is unauthorized, and Mr. Lynch should have the ability to challenge it here. And if we're looking at it, I think where the scenario is that Mr. Lynch is said to have agreed to an amount of restitution like he did Here, it's his position that he's in almost substantially the same position as if restitution were a part of his plea and the district court changed the amount of it. And I think what happened here was there was no basis for the modification. And I guess a second wrong here, you know, doesn't make a right. So just saying, well, oops, you know, it happened, it shouldn't have, let's put back the restitution shouldn't be how it's dealt with when that was 7 years ago and Mr. Lynch didn't even know about this modification at the time because he didn't get the order served on him and only learned about it when the amount of money withheld from his prison income had increased.
Yeah, Mr. Longsdorf, can you point us to any authority that says the proper remedy would be to allow him to withdraw his plea? It seems to me, even if we agree with you on many of the points you're making, the remedy is to correct the error, which was the change in the restitution amount. There's been already been an appeal that has affirmed the conviction and has affirmed the order of restitution. So I really have a hard time following the argument that somehow we get to a plea withdrawal remedy as opposed to a correction of the error you're alleging, which was an improper change in the amount of restitution that was already affirmed. Maybe you can help me with this, but I can't see any way under the law that we get to plea withdrawal here.
I cannot point you to any case law that directly states that in this circumstance, Your Honor. And also I couldn't find any, I'm not aware of any case law that we discovered preparing for this where restitution had been reduced in this manner. But it's our position is the way we get to the plea withdrawal is this. As I said, we believe that the modification was unauthorized and inappropriate. We're in a scenario where Mr. Lynch is said to have agreed to an amount of restitution as part of his sentence that the judge imposed. That was modified without Mr. Lynch's consent. That's, in our view, analogous to a Rule 15.04 scenario, where Mr. Lynch should either be able to say, I agree with that, or I want to withdraw the plea and redo this thing. And so that's how we get to that point. But the short answer is no, I don't know of any case law that says that that is the appropriate remedy.
So what is the appropriate remedy then? If plea withdrawal is off the table?
If plea withdrawal is off the table, I believe the appropriate remedy is that the sentence remain where it is, because I do think that we'd be in a scenario where 7 years down the road, increasing the amount of restitution again, I think would raise serious problems where Mr. Lynch didn't have noticed the first time, but now restitution is being reimposed and there wouldn't be, I don't think, a specific basis to reimpose it at this time because Rule 27.03, I think, wouldn't specifically allow that, and Rule 611A.04 only applies if we didn't know the amount of restitution at an earlier time. So I guess if plea withdrawal is off the table, then the appropriate remedy would be that restitution stays where it is.
So what would we need to do then? I mean, if restitution just stays where it is, in other words, are you saying that the reduction in restitution that the district court approved should just stay as is?
Well, I do think, I mean, I believe, I guess our ultimate remedy here would be that Mr. Lynch should have the opportunity to take part in that decision, which he hasn't yet, and either, affirm it or say, I don't, and then have the district court make the decision with Mr. Lynch's participation, because I think, the restitution modification statute does at least say under 611A.04 that Mr. Lynch should have the opportunity to take part and be heard on that. And so I think the appropriate remedy is still some kind of hearing where Mr. Lynch gets to make that decision and take part in it.
Can you point us to any circumstance where he would agree to an increase in his restitution? I mean, that seems to be like a frivolous remedy, quite frankly, because I can't think of any circumstance where he would agree that his restitution should be increased. So what good would a remand do under those circumstances?
Well, I don't think that Mr. Lynch would want his restitution reimposed, but I guess part of the reason that this, you know, he wanted to bring this motion and we brought it was he didn't have any say in this in the beginning, and that's how we got to this position. And so I don't think as I sit here right now, I'm in a position to concede that or say that on Mr. Lynch's behalf that he would never agree to that or how he would ultimately agree with it. But I think, I guess, as far as our view of the remedy would go, we're analogous to a 15.04 scenario. And then, you know, that's how we believe it should be dealt with. And then in the absence of any questions, I don't have anything further.
Thank you very much, Mr. Langsdorf. We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Alexandra Meyer, and I represent respondent, State of Minnesota. Mr. Lynch's objection to the 2014 reduction in his court-ordered restitution is absurd. At sentencing, Judge Millenacker heard Mr. Lynch's arguments against paying restitution and his claimed inability to do so while in prison. On direct appeal, Mr. Lynch challenged the original restitution order, citing these very same reasons. When the deceased victim's sister asked to cancel her portion of the restitution a few months after the appeal was final, Judge Millenacker agreed based on her understanding that Mr. Lynch neither wanted to pay restitution nor thought he had the ability to do so. As you pointed out, Judge Connolly, there was no prejudice to Mr. Lynch. This reduction was in line with his interests. Reducing the previously ordered restitution by $4,207 was within Judge Millenacker's inherent authority and discretion based on the new information she received. The September 2014 restitution order did not impact the plea agreement in any way. When he pled guilty to murdering his girlfriend in 2012, Mr. Lynch did not agree to pay restitution. The district court imposed restitution solely under its Chapter 611A statutory authority, not as a term in the plea agreement. Then in his 2020 post-conviction petition, Mr. Lynch demanded that because his restitution had been reduced without his agreement months after his plea, he should be able to choose whether to remain a party to the plea agreement or withdraw his plea entirely. Judge Millenacker saw through this ruse, and she found the filing could not be a Rule 27 motion affecting only his sentence. But it was a post-conviction petition, and that petition was untimely and NAFLA barred.
And that's where, Ms. Meyer, again, speaking for myself and not my treasured colleagues, that's where I thought the district court may have erred. And that's because, pursuant to what you just said, restitution was not part of the plea agreement. And so if it's not part of the plea agreement, I think, apart from the merits, then I think the proper method is a Rule 27 motion to correct a sentence. And here I'm looking at a case that, you know, wasn't referred to, but which I actually found with my own two hands. State v. Evans, 880 Northwest 2nd, 2016. And there, you know, and it looks like the Supreme Court has sort of took a lot of these cases back and forth about what's part of the plea agreement and what's not. And there they say specifically, and here I'm, I guess this is page 360, a motion to correct a sentence is not the proper method to challenge a restitution award that is entered pursuant to a defendant's negotiated plea in which payment of restitution is a material part of the negotiation. So I think, therefore, since, you know, the converse would also be true, since restitution was not part of the plea agreement, he's within his rights to do a Rule 27 motion. And simply because Mr. Langsdorf wants him to withdraw his, or wants to be able to let him to withdraw his plea, that's not what we look at. We look at, is it part of the plea agreement or not? If it is, then it's post-conviction relief. If it isn't, then it's a Rule 27. So why am I wrong as to that analysis, Ms. Meyer? I usually am.
You may not be wrong, but I believe the district court has the ability to look at the effect of the motion. There is case law about when a motion, you don't look at the title of the motion, you look at what the ultimate effect will be. And here, Mr. Langsdorf or Mr. Lynch stated clearly what he wanted the effect to be. He wanted a hearing where he gets to decide whether or not to withdraw his plea. So Judge Millenacker described it as a Trojan horse strategy, where what she is seeing on the surface is not, would be a Rule 27 motion, but what is below the surface cannot be, because the ultimate effect would be to change the underlying conviction.
Right. You know, I agree with you. I think that is how the judge analyzed it. And I certainly got the Trojan horse part. But I guess I would approach it differently. Now, what about this, Ms. Meyer? What about if Mr. Langsdorff's client was truly, you know, seen the Lord and realized, you know, I did do it. I want to be held responsible. I do want to pay everything that I owe, whether the victim wants it or not. Under those circumstances, would he be entitled to have actually a hearing to object and say, I don't want my restitution reduced. I want to pay the full 10 grand. Would he be allowed to do that?
He would be allowed to do that, but back in 2015, in his first post-conviction petition. He is not allowed to, in a subsequent post-conviction petition, challenge something that was in the record that should have been known by his attorney at the very least during the initial post-conviction petition. He can't ignore it then and then bring it up now.
But how would he have known, Ms. Meyer? The victim, or one of the victim, or the victim's sister changed her mind. How would he ever know at the time someone was going to say, I want less restitution. I mean, I'm not so sure. I mean, how would you know that? I mean, how would you know that at all? And so I'm not sure that's right. And for example, I mean, on the flip side, if the victim had said, you know, I want to be done with this. I don't want to pay any restitution. Here's a satisfaction of judgment. Would you be allowed to object to that and say, wait a minute, you know, restitution was ordered. Therefore, we should, the state objects. Or in turn, would that depend on whether the restitution was part of the original plea agreement?
It depends on whether the restitution was part of the bargain for agreement. When the judge herself was the one to order the restitution without the input of the parties, then I believe you're correct.
Okay. So, I mean, the bottom line is, I think for the state, you may disagree with me as to whether this was a post-conviction relief motion or a motion to correct sentence. But ultimately, he certainly didn't get it to withdraw his plea. Mr. Langsdorff is suggesting perhaps we should have remanded for a hearing so that his client can have the opportunity to say, I agree to the reduction, or I want to pay what I originally owed. What do you think of that?
It would appear to me to be a waste of the district court's time to have a pro forma motion to make sure he had notice of a thing that is in his interest when there isn't an option for the court to reimpose the already reduced restitution. If the choice is going to be for the district court, reimpose the $4,000 or not, then a hearing may be appropriate. But if the restitution reduction is going to stay in place and he just gets to appear and say, now I know about it, yes, please reduce it, this court can certainly do that. It just doesn't appear like it would be a meaningful appearance.
What do you think if we reversed and remanded for imposition of the original restitution amount, just as an order? Would we have the authority to do that?
Absolutely. I think there is definitely an argument that the district court didn't necessarily follow all the procedures to ensure that notice went to Mr. Lynch while he was potentially pro se in prison. And if he didn't have that notice, there's certainly, you could find that the judge didn't properly alter the restitution. Therefore, it wasn't authorized and the original restitution should be reimposed. That seems like it overly penalizes Mr. Lynch. And I think we'd be back here potentially, as I believe you said, for an ineffective assistance of counsel motion, because now his sentence has been increased based on a late motion involving restitution.
So I just want to ask a question about the record based upon a prior comment you made, Ms. Meyer. Do you agree, and I think this is my recollection of the record, do you agree that the order of Judge Millenacker reducing restitution was part of the record when appellant filed his first post-conviction proceeding?
That is correct. The order was filed on September 18, 2014, and the post-conviction petition was filed just over a year later, September 25th, 2015. Right. It was the most recent document in the court record prior to filing the post-conviction petition.
All right, thank you. I apologize for interrupting you, Judge Reyes.
Not a problem. I wanted to follow up on the line of questioning from Judge Connolly, and you had mentioned that there is an argument that could be made that maybe notice wasn't provided appropriately. But as we had discussed with Mr. Longsdorf, there's also the issue of what is the prejudice. But I want to go back to what relief is being sought, because it seems to be that there are two parts of the relief being sought here. One is giving him the opportunity to either agree or disagree with a modification to his sentence. And that sentence was that portion of the sentence of restitution was imposed by the district court. And I believe the record reflects that was not part of the plea agreement. And so given that, it seems that that is a Rule 27 motion focused solely on the sentence itself and should not have been construed as a post-conviction petition. But we have this request to allow him to withdraw his plea agreement based on an argument that this is part of the plea agreement. I don't think the record reflects that this was actually part of the plea agreement, but nonetheless, that request is there. And that seems to go to the conviction. So I'm trying to understand what's your best argument that the district court was correct in construing this as a post-conviction petition? Is it because of the request to allow him to withdraw his plea agreement?
That is certainly the driving force behind Judge Millenacker's analysis. Because the post-conviction petition / Rule 27 motion clearly stated its objective was to have the opportunity to withdraw a plea, it can't be treated simply as a Rule 27 motion. Judge Millenacker could have granted that portion of the motion denying the request to withdraw the plea and saying, yes, I'll grant you the ability to increase the restitution, but that's an absurd result. This is a backdoor way into trying to finagle a plea withdrawal disguised as a motion, and it's untimely and barred unless it can be a Rule 27 motion. So I come back to Judge Millenacker's analysis that this is a Trojan horse motion.
So given that, what's your best argument that the district court was correct in construing it then as a petition for post-conviction relief.
The best argument that the district court was correct is that she looked at the entire motion, and she was in the best position, having presided over the sentencing, the restitution amendments. She understood the position of the parties and what Mr. Lynch had wanted since he actually appeared for sentencing. He wanted to withdraw his plea at the sentencing hearing. He asked for plea withdrawal on direct appeal, and Judge Millenacker was able to understand what his goal was in the motion, and therefore it had to be a post-conviction petition. I see that my time is up. Unless there are any further questions, the state asks that you affirm the post-conviction court's decision, or in the alternative, remand for the district court to reimpose the $4,207 in restitution.
Thank you, Ms. Meyer. Mr. Longsdorf, you'll have the last word, sir.
I apologize. I don't have anything additional to add about how we get to why Rule 15.04 would be the appropriate remedy that I didn't touch on. But I would just point out that as far as, even if this is treated as post-conviction, I think it can be timely in the interest of justice, just because the only evidence on that is Mr. Lynch's submitted information that he wasn't aware of it. It's the kind of motion that, because restitution continued to be withheld until the summer of 2018, there wasn't really anything that triggered Mr. Lynch to know about it. And in my view, the way what the Supreme Court looks at with this interest to justice is there some kind of outside impediment? I think not being served and then having an order that doesn't really do anything that a defendant would notice until the summer of 2018 would satisfy that. And then Mr. Lynch would just need to bring his motion within 2 years after that. So I think it's timely, and I do think it's appropriate to address the merits of his request for withdrawal of his plea. In absent questions, I have nothing further.
Mr. Longsdorf, I want to go back to the question that Judge Connolly had the first time around, because I think it's an excellent question, and it really goes to what's in the interest of justice and judicial economy. And that is, since he has been granted a $4,000 plus reduction in his restitution, what is the prejudice to him? And I realize you argued earlier that he wasn't given notice or a chance to agree or disagree, but putting aside the procedural issues, from the substantive standpoint, what is the prejudice to him? It seems like it's only a benefit.
I think substantively that it's not prejudice to an individual to have the amount of restitution reduced. And again, the only thing I can come back to is our position that, you know, the Court of Appeals ultimately decided that Mr. Lynch had agreed to an amount of restitution such that he wasn't even able to challenge it. It was something that's known that he's been opposed to, and then it's modified again without his knowledge. And he believes that it resulted in an unauthorized sentence, and the prejudice to him might not be in the amount of dollars he owes, but it is in that there's an order that was unauthorized and made without his participation.
But his challenge to the restitution was having to pay it in the first place. And now if he doesn't, it's almost cut in half. What is the prejudice to him?
I agree there is not a prejudice in that he doesn't pay more, he pays less, so that is a benefit to him. Okay. But in Mr. Lynch's view, having any modification to that after he said to agree to it is prejudice to him.
Well, I guess, Mr. Longsdorf, Mr. Lynch is a man of principle and wants his day in court.
I believe that would be his position.
And you really don't want us to reverse and remand for imposition of the original restitution amount, do you?
I don't think it would be appropriate to reimpose all of that restitution at this point, 7 years after it was removed, you know.
I think I agree with you, sir. I think there are no more questions, Mr. Longsdorf. Unless you have something else, I think we're concluded. It's your call, sir.
I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Longsdorf. Thank you, Ms. Meyer. It's a very interesting case. We will get our opinion out within 90 days. So good afternoon. We'll have the next case.